The Sanctuary, a community of Jesus people promoting the glory of God in all things to all nations through gospel-centered missional living. Whether it be working with groups in Africa to build orphanages and help rid the continent of AIDS, or feeding the hungry, giving to the oppressed, and helping the hurting who live in our own community, the Sanctuary invites you to be part of a culture of passionate service. You can change your world. Be inspired. Join the movement.
Well, good morning. All right, there's like two of y'all that are having a good morning. That's cool. That's cool. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's more like it. Pastor Joe was telling me you guys are a very demonstrative church, meaning you do a lot of things external, and I love that. I dig that. In fact, it's been an honor to be with your students this weekend. It's been great. I'm a South Texan myself, so Houston's kind of considered South Texas, right? More Western Louisiana, but we'll embrace you guys. I was born outside of San Antonio, so folks, just live down the road. If you take I-10, before you get to San Antonio, you get to a little town called Seguin, and that's where I'm from. Are y'all from Seguin? That's awesome. That is awesome. Are you really from Seguin? Did you go to Seguin High School? Like, what street did you grow up on? You know where River Street is? You know where the Texas Theater is? I grew up in the Stone House right behind Texas Theater. That's awesome. Orale Matadors, right? Yeah, Pecan Queen. You were at the Pecan Queen, were you? Okay, thank God. Okay, because that was a story from Friday night, and I basically made fun of it the whole time. So, that's awesome. That's so awesome. My sister and I used to work at Schlitterbahn. You guys ever hear of Schlitterbahn? Yeah. So, it used to be called Stinky Falls back in the day, and then, like, you know, corporate America came and bought it. So, no, it's been a fantastic time. Your students are great. I love this church. I've loved this area. Always love coming back to this area. It's such a pleasure, and the opportunities to travel for me are great. Your Pastor Matt was right. I'll fly back out today, and then tomorrow I'm like somewhere out on the water. So the fact that God would take a kid from. In fact, here I'm going to keep having a dialogue with you. What's your name, by the way? Melissa. Melissa and I are just going to keep talking, so y'all can go home, go to Whataburger, whatever you want to do. Beat the Methodist to Luby's, I don't care. So, I'm actually from Lake McQueenie. Do you know where that's at? That's so crazy. You know where Lake McQueenie is? Lake McQueenie's literally made its money off Houstonians water skiing on weekends. So, my dad was a residential builder. He made his career building all the wealthy Houston people their summer homes on Lake McQueenie. So, I grew up out there, and so the fact that I'm from Route 1, actually, where my grandparents live, the fact that God would take a kid from the trailer park, literally, like we grew up actually in a garage of a trailer park is where I went when I was born in Guadalupe County Hospital. We moved into the garage of the trailer, of a trailer house. So like trailer park people would look at us and go, they're trashy. All right. So like that's my story. In a nutshell, all right? And then the fact of that, and I was just, I think Connor is his name, I think we were talking just a moment ago, like I am hyperactively and my mind's never stopped, it never stops running, it never stops, like I ask questions all the time, right? Like I'm always asking myself, like we'll be in the car and my mind will start wondering. And my wife, who's been my bride for 18 straight years and she's just the love of my life, she's from Napa Valley, California, all right? So, like, she's from wine country, and I was 30 before I found out it doesn't come in a box, you know, kind of a deal. So, she's, like, you know, from these great, like these great locations, you know, and I was like, well, which one is Boone's Farm, you know, kind of when I was going through that, you know, and she just looks at me like I'm a moron, because I am, all right? We'll be in the car, though, and she'll ask me a question like, I can't believe I told an alcohol joke on Sunday morning. So, we'll be in the car and we'll be driving down the road and she'll say, hey, what are you thinking about? You're kind of quiet. And as a typical man, I'll say, what? Nothing. Exactly. Now, ladies, for those of y'all that aren't married, when a guy says nothing, we're really not thinking about anything, right? Like, there's actually a biochemist, like, so there's a part of our brain where nothing goes on. Like, we have to have that. And now, ladies, this is I'm not an expert on women by any means. That's why God gave me two daughters, a wife, and even our dog is female. So to counterbalance the house there. And so, ladies, I've understood this about you, that when we say nothing, it becomes your life mission to get in there. But you can't get in there, because if you're in there, it's no longer nothing, because you're in there then. Does that make sense? But you start thinking that we're hiding something. So we'll be still driving down the road. Last week, we're driving to go to Monticello. We want to take the kids to go see where Thomas Jefferson lived and all that kind of stuff. And so we're driving. We live in Southern Virginia, so it's about a two-hour drive. So we're driving. She's like, what do you think about it? I said, nothing. She's like, no, like, what are you really thinking about? I said, I'm not thinking about anything. And then she starts getting panicked. I know he's hiding something from me, you know. And so she's like, you've got to. And my wife, bless her heart, she's just phenomenally intelligent, just up there in a stratosphere that I don't live in. And yet, so she's just thinking of all these different possibilities and stuff. And so she finally comes out after about four attempts to ask me what I'm thinking, with my response being nothing. And she just goes, just comes out of left field and says, look, I know that we're still working on some things. And even though we've been married almost two decades, like, it's still, we've got stuff to improve and work on. And I know that the wedding day, 20 years ago, right? Like, the wedding day wasn't everything that I expected. I thought I'd get a knight in shining armor on a horse. Instead, I got Shrek on a donkey and all this kind of stuff. And so it's okay, but marriage is based on transparency and honesty, and just tell me what you're thinking. So I did. I was like, well, I'm thinking about a couple things today, actually. First off, in Raiders of the Lost Ark, at the very beginning, how did they get that big cement ball into that temple, right? The one that rolls out. And then I'm thinking about, like, Chris Pine, he's not a bad Captain Kirk, you know, in the new revamp. Not bad. And then the third thing is, I'm thinking, like, why do men take selfies? Like, if you're a dude, don't take a selfie, all right? I don't know why we do that. In fact, I don't take selfies. Jimmy was teasing me about this the other day. I don't take selfies. I take otheries. So that means I take pictures of, like, other people. So my wife asked... Like, my kids and wife asked, could I take a picture of y'all this morning? So I told her I'd take a picture. There you go. And then I'm not forgetting left field. So there you go. All right, there you go. So I'll send that back to him. And when I tell her that, she's like, this look of fear comes on her face. Because her greatest fear has just been realized, which is, I've married a moron. We've been talking about courage this weekend, and I think that's something that there was a joke yesterday where one of the students walked by and asked me if I'd seen some movie, like the new, I think it was a live movie, Beating the Beast now, and I joked back with it. I was like, I don't know, is John Wayne in it? Because if John Wayne's not in it, I probably haven't seen it. So there's an old quote that's been given to John Wayne. I don't know if he said it or not, but he said, you know, courage is being scared and still saddling up anyway, you know. And I don't know if he said it. I don't know if Branson, Missouri makes an ashtray with it on it. All of a sudden we gave him credit. So, but one of the things that we've talked about with courage that we haven't said, but it's kind of been grafted into the themes, has been, do I have what it takes to be courageous when the moment comes? And it's interesting because, I don't know, do we have any veterans in here? Do we have any veterans here? Army, any soldiers in here? Okay, a few soldiers in here. Any airmen in here? Do we have any airmen? Any airmen? Right. Marine Corps? Okay, that was my next. I was going to use smaller words, but I was going to ask about the Marine Corps, so love that. I've gotten to work with Marine Corps. Are you West Coast or Paris Island?
West Coast.
Oh, awesome. Okay, well, I'm Paris Island, so, you know, that's okay. Hollywood, Marine, we got to have them, you know, all that kind of stuff. So all that, so we call it, and awesome stuff. And sailors in here. We got any sailors in here? All right, so no sailors. So one, I'm the only one. Okay, good deal. Any other Marines in here, by the way? Any other sea service guys in here? One Marine, okay. So a Marine and a sailor. That's cool. Man, we got this, you know. So, all right. You guys know, those of y'all that have served, that a lot of people will ask us about the courage, maybe, especially combat. And you know, I'll be really honest. The combat on the outside, yeah, it's there. But the combat internally that takes place in our minds all the time is relentless, isn't it? And you don't have to have walked in any kind of military background to experience that. You and I battle a fight for courage every single day. And let's be very honest, as World A people, right, living in the wealthiest country where you and I are trying to figure out what restaurant are we going to eat at, how much are we going to eat, like our cars are a few years old, so it's time to get a new one, you know, concerned about how many likes you get or how much approval you get or what your golf score is or it, you know, how your retirement fund's working out. Like, let's be honest, you and I, we're so control freaks that we think about when it comes to that pinpoint of courageous moment and courageous living, we replay the scenario again and again and again and again so that we've got things under control. And one of the things I want to talk to you about, if you've got a Bible or you've got it on your phone, turn on or turn into the book of Genesis, because there is this phenomenal layout of what courage looks like that you and I can learn from. But not only we can learn from it, but we need to understand and grasp the reality that God has been sitting there going, that's cool. In your moments of courage, you've got your own narrative of what you want to have played out, but he is writing, or he's wanting to write a different kind of story. But the problem is that you and I have been like this. I think there's a pin in every seat. Take out that pin, just kind of hold it there for a moment. You and I have been writing a story. And some of y'all have been writing some really impressive stories. I did this, I did that, I accomplished this, I've earned this, I've gotten this far, I've done this. And then we bring that story to God, and we're like, it's a pretty good story, right? God, I mean, you've equipped me, you've given me talents. God helps those that helps themselves. That's somewhere in 1 Opinions chapter 3, even so I'm gonna bring that to you. Like Christians, we believe that kind of garbage, even though there's nothing in the Bible that says stuff like that. But God, I've got my own thing going, and then God, you bless it. And I'm a good writer. I'm even doing it in cursive, and some of y'all are like, and we don't even teach cursive in school anymore, and I'm doing it in cursive. So God, it's pretty impressive. Like the creator of the universe is going to look at it and go, I did the Pacific Ocean, but like this is good right here. Like I did the Rocky Mountain Range and Mount Everest. You know, I threw Pleiades into the sky, but man, this is good bedside reading here. You see, we take our own stuff and we write that down. And we wonder if that's courageous when God's been saying all along, hey, like give me the pen. And that's the line in the sand right there. Because you and I, let's be very frank, as independent Texans, we don't like giving someone else control. And so we've, maybe the greatest fight all of us fight in here, whether you're a student going through the weekend or whether you're here for the first time, is that you and I have been actually wrestling for years over a pen. And the pen's been about writing your story. Chapter 32, starting in verse 24, the most important words I'm going to say go like this. Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. And when he saw that he had not prevailed against him, he touched the socket of his thigh so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. And then he said, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. But then he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So he said to him, what is your name? And he said, Jacob. And he said, your name shall no longer be Jacob, but is Israel, for you have striven with God and with men, and you have prevailed. Then Jacob asked him and said, please tell me your name. But he said, why is that that you ask my name? And he blessed him right there. Father, I ask that right now you will instruct even me, because I am in need of your grace, even at what this word is saying, even at this moment. These next few minutes are my offering to you. Would you be pleased with it for your glory and your honor? And in your name I ask these things, Jesus. Amen. Amen. He was a thief. Now, he wasn't like a cat burglar or like an out-and-out con man. He was a good businessman in a capitalistic system where he was able to look for the loopholes in things and take advantage of them. Have mercy if you ever showed him any kind of vulnerability, because he would take advantage of it. But he has always had to be a survivor. If you tried to pin him down, he could tell you his life story, and you would sympathize with the fact that he has always had to look out over his shoulder and look for his own. Because even at an early age, his father didn't necessarily approve of him. He had this overbearing mother, and he had a brother who disliked him and didn't understand him. But it grew from not understanding to dislike, from dislike into discord, and discord into potential murder. And at an early age, Jacob runs from home. Now he starts building from ground up. And maybe you can understand this. Maybe you can even relate to this. Maybe this is even part of your story, where you're able to say, man, I had to pick myself up. I had to start on my own. No one else was looking after me. No one else was doing things for me. I had to go and begin from ground zero. And now look at me, several years down the road, I've got this business empire. I've got this large family. I am in control. And then that little voice in the back of your head starts telling you, maybe much like Jacob, it is time to kind of go rectify some things. And so Jacob begins to split away from some of the business dealings that he's had with. Some of the people are glad. Some of the people are sad. Most of the people are just relieved because they are ready for this kind of guy that they can't quite put their finger on, but he seems kind of slimy as he begins to leave. And as he begins to leave, he takes this enormous amount of wealth with him. And tons of questions. Talk about questions of courage. And what am I going to do when I go back home? What am I going to say when I go back home? Last time I talked to my brother, he was yelling at me. He wanted to kill me. And I'm going back home, but I'm going to make things right. One night, Jacob's in bed, and he can't sleep. He's tossing and he's turning and he's got the sheets on. He's got the sheets off. He tries to walk around a bit. He tries to repeat the process of how the normal process of going to get ready to bed. He's trying to flip the pillow over to find the cooler side of the pillow. He's checking all the different temperatures. He's doing whatever he can. He cannot get to sleep. And then finally, he decides to wake his entire family up. He's got several different wives, which is just a cultural understanding of the type of culture that he was living in at the time. He ends up splitting them up, sending one in one direction and sending another in another direction. He's nervous. He's full of anxiety. He sends out some scouts. He hears that his brother's coming to meet him, so he sends some scouts. The scouts come back and they say, we have some good news, we have some bad news. And he's just pacing, going, well, okay, what's the good news, I guess? The scout says, well, the good news, sir, is your brother's coming to meet you. It's like, yeah. Awesome. Okay, good, 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 good. What's the bad news? Well, he's bringing several hundred of his armed friends with him. Okay. So you see now why he splits the camp, because at least if he loses his assets, he only loses half of them. Another thing he's also doing is interesting. He's doing what you and I probably do every 7 days, to be honest. All right? You see, earlier on in his life, he was alone in the desert. And while he was on the desert floor, God met him and showed him and gave him a vision and gave him a promise and spoke words of insight and knowledge and power and equipping to him. And so Jacob's at this moment where he's at this crisis and in this conflict, and he's out there on the desert floor. And so what is he doing when he leaves and he separates his camp and he moves everything away? He is recreating that moment again. Now, this isn't hard for you to understand if you think about it from this point, but imagine the last time God met with you in such a powerful way, your life was rocked. And what do you and I do? We forget that it's about God speaking to us, and instead, we try to manipulate and control the situation so that we can make it feel just like it was each time. That's why there's worship wars. That's why there's music. That's why there's people that go, I'm not going to really sing this song because it doesn't really touch me. I get touched when this song is being played. That's because you're trying to recreate the same desert experience that you had last time God met with you. And if I'm offending you in any way, I don't mean to. I just know that in my Christian life, the last time I meet with God, what do? I even get my Bible. I get the same type of Bible, sit at the same table, get the same cup of coffee, whatever it was, go to the same place, the same beach, same scenario, because I want to meet with God. It's just I don't understand a lot of times that it's not about the scenario that's the factor. It's about who I was meeting with that's the factor. And so Jacob's creating that same moment again, but God doesn't come down to show him a ladder of angels ascending and descending. Instead, the lights show up in the desert, and God shows up, but instead of giving him a vision, he gives him a forearm to the head. Look back down at the text. It's a true story. As he sits there and as Jacob is there alone, verse 24, a man. Now, who is this man? Well, this is God in the flesh. Who's God in the flesh? The revelatory Christ has come to wrestle with Jacob. And I love it because, unfortunately, because of Renaissance paintings and Thomas Kincaid stuff and Lifeway, you know, pictures and flannel boards, they've made it seem like it was a wrestling match that we don't really understand because of the way artists have tried to depict it. But let me kind of throw a little bit of a different shade on this, all right? When I was a kid, I'd want to wrestle with my dad. Most guys do, right? And we'd be in the living room floor and my dad would be there. I made a joke on Friday night that, like, if Jack Nicholson and John Wayne had a baby, he'd be my dad, you know, basically. So he'd be on the floor and he'd be ready to wrestle and I'd run at him and he'd hit me and knock me down and I'd get back up and I'd go over to the other part of the floor and I'd run back at him and he'd hit me and I'd go back down again. My stepmother, actually, would be sitting in a chair reading a magazine or, you know, whatever. And she would look over the magazine and she would say very calmly, what do you mom say when you see things like that? Somebody's going to get hurt. And it was never my dad. Never once did I throw something at my dad and he go, that kind of hurt, you know. Never once. It continues on in the text and what does it say? When he saw that he had not prevailed against him. Now, this is where a lot of us kind of get the story kind of mixed up because we read the story and we're like, how in the world could the most incredible, powerful, all-knowing, creator, sovereign God in the universe allow himself to get pinned by a con man? Like, we have it down where, like, in our brains we think that Jacob's got God's pin and he's like, say uncle, but it's really not like that because it's more maybe kind of what was going on in the living room for me as a kid is that my dad, when he had had enough, he would get up, he'd brush himself off, and he'd start walking away going, that's enough, and like one last ditch effort, I would jump for his leg, I would wrap my arms around one leg, hoping that I would trip him up, he'd fall over, he'd hit his head on the counter, knock himself out, I could climb on his chest and declare myself winner. And as my dad would be walking away, right, he would look down and what would he say? Hey, get off me. I think that's more of what Jacob and God are doing at that moment. God's not pinned. It's that he said down to Jacob, who's holding him, get off me. Now, what's the problem? We'll look back at verse 25. God had touched the socket of the thigh so that the socket of Jacob's thigh was dislocated while he wrestled with him. Now, maybe you've thought about this story before and you've been like, maybe they're kind of squaring off and God's like, boop, and like the hip comes out. But the Hebrew construct of that shows us that it's not a situation like that. It's more like God's got both ankles and he goes, dude, make a wish. It's a violent shaking. Now, I don't know if you've ever broken anything. But imagine this human clinging to the Almighty with a leg that is so badly severed. For the story goes on at the end of the chapter. You can see it that Jacob limps for the rest of his life. It is that bad of a deal. All right? And he looks down. This is, okay, so this is where it gets kind of crazy. Verse 26, he says, let me go, for the dawn is breaking. He said, but I will not let you go unless you bless me. Now, I don't know if it was like a cordial thing, like, hey, would you please detach yourself? You know, and he's like, oh, sorry, you know, cool. No, this is more of God looking down, rebuking him, going, let me go. And Jacob's probably going, I'm not going to let you go. Think about it. There's probably a lot of dialogue going on here. I'm not going to let you go. I've been running all my life. I've been looking over my shoulder. No one's been helping me. You came and met with me one time, and I had a vision, and I thought it could happen again, but my hip is severed from my body right now. I am starving. I am thirsty. My family is separated into the desert right now. Neither one of them likes me. My brother is coming with 100 of his armed friends who hates me, and they're coming to say hello. I have nothing. My body is wrecked. I'm alone. You are all I have. I'm not letting go. Now, most of us would think that God would do what? Ay, que pobrecito, and like pick him up and, you know. Ay, no hay nada, que chulo. You know, I mean, like. He does this weird thing, though. Look back at the text. What does he say? He looks down at him. Verse 27, what is your name? Now, this isn't like they've been wrestling all night and God's walking away and he looks down and he goes, man, you look so familiar. Where have we seen each other? That's not it. What is he doing? What is he doing? What did a name mean in the Middle Eastern culture? Your identity, right? He's wanting him to openly confess. Because look back down at the verse. What does he say? So my name's Jacob. He doesn't say like, Jacob, like, well, that's my name. You should have like, I thought you knew my name, you know. He says, who are you? What is the essence of who you are? And for those of y'all that don't know, the name Jacob means what? Heel grabber. He has to admit, he has to confess. I am a liar. I'm a cheat. I'm a thief. I've always looked out to benefit on top of the shoulders of other people at the expense of other people. I've always looked out for number one. I've never cared about really anybody else. It's always been about me. That's who I am. That's what I'm about. That's what God was getting Jacob to admit. And what does God in his grace do in response? He says, your name will no longer be Jacob. So he renames him. And it's huge. This is a critical point of this part of the text because it's not like God was going, I'm not really fond of Jacob. I don't really like Jacobs. We're going to rename you. You're going to be named Scooter. No, what does he do? He gives him a new identity. He says, you have strived, you've struggled, you have fought with God and with man. And the word prevail has several different options you can take. I personally prefer survive. Because isn't that what we're grateful for when we've been fighting with God, is that we're just surviving? Your pastors are incredible. I love your pastor Joe. I can't say enough great things about him. I think he's phenomenally courageous. I think he's a great leader. I love his heart. And I've known Jimmy since he was in high school, and just seeing, God, his hand is on him, you know, and meeting Pastor Matt this weekend has just been a total gift. One of the things that each one of them have talked about is this, they haven't said it with these words, but they've talked about how the Lord has renamed them at times and given them this. I thought I was going down this road, and the Lord took me down this road. And the openness to that. And then how God, in fact, one of your pastors said this, I was living a life where pretty much I thought God should have smeared me, I think is the direct quote one of y'all gave me. And in the middle of that, I think that's Jacob right there. He's like, God's like, you're going to strive with me, you're going to fight against me, but you're going to survive, you're going to live. What is he named? He's named Israel. Named Israel. Now, for those of y'all that aren't big on history, you're going to be like, "Well, that's kind of cool. God named him after a country, right? That's right, like a tourism destination. That's cool. I would have been preferred Acapulco, but like, you know, that's fine. Like, you know, that's cool. You know, the whole thing. No. This is the birthright here of that nation. This is the Genesis origin event of one of the most resilient people that civilization will ever see. All right." Now, I'm in uniform today, so I'm not going to get political, all right? But I will tell you this, because this is not a political statement. This is just truth, okay? Who is Israel today? Well, Jesus says that those who are children of the Father, that is Israel. The ones who have said, Christ, you are my king, All right? That's who he's talking about here. He's not talking about geographic Israel. He's not talking about, you know, any kind of political things. And by the way, just on that side note, man, I am pro-Israel. I have a Jewish stepmother that I've grown up with. So, man, I can tell you all kinds of different stories about the high holidays and all that kind of stuff. I've gotten the opportunities of working with Israeli navies. I've gotten to work with Mossad. I've gotten to work with all the different groups that are in the IDF. Man, I love it. They're a great democracy that's in the middle of the Middle East. Phenomenal people. But the point of the story for you and I today and being true to the text is that who are the descendants of this man that's on the desert floor? It's the people that choose Christ as king. Because Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and life, and no man comes to the Father except through me. So there is one way, one Savior, one baptism, one wrestling match, one name. Peter says this, there's one name above all names that brings salvation, right? But I don't want you to miss the simplicity of the story here. Jacob let God rename him and give him his identity. And you and I, unfortunately, we're not at the end of this story. We're still in the wrestling match. Because you've been writing your story. Student, you've been writing your 16 years so far. And you've been doing it the way your parents have done it. So I'm going to pick on you parents for a moment. You've been teaching them, showing, take things into your own hands. You take things into control. You do what you need to do. You be who you need to be. And you write this out. And this is the program you go. This is how Texas wants you to do education. You play sports this way. You do your arts this way. You play your band this way. You do your music this way. This is how you dress. This is how you act. And what we've been doing is we've been training them that behavior modification is going to be able to make it when Paul and Christ, even more importantly, says, look, it's through me, he says. Let me identify you. Let me name you. Let me give you that identification. Quit wrestling with me. And some of you know exactly what I'm talking about because you're on the desert floor with a dislocated leg as well. Some of you adults in this room are walking through a wrestling match right now. You've given your life to Christ, but there is something in your lifestyle, there's something in your practice. I believe right now there's one of you in here that is walking through a scenario where you've got a business situation and you're not giving him the pen and he's saying, give me the pen, and you go, I'm going to write this on my own. Think about the audacity of you telling the Almighty, I know better. You don't understand. You created me. You know how many times I blink in the day. You know how many lack of hairs I have on my head. Don't laugh at me. Yet, you watch over me. You never sleep. You never slumber. You understand quantum theory to the 10th level on the 10th dimension. Yet, in my own understanding, in my business on the corner of Westheimer and Maine, I know how to run things. You don't understand, God. I'm a junior at Lamar. I know what's working. You don't understand, God. I made 6 figures last year. I paid for my vehicles. I've got trophies on the wall. I've got trophies on the cabinet. I've got the trophy wife. God, I've got a brand new truck right out there. I give when Pastor Matt asked me to give. God, I know what I'm doing. And what you've done is you've said, God, I'll be God. So I'm just giving you a warning if that's your deal. Everybody's got a deal. If that's your deal, get ready for a hip dislocation. Or, regardless of where you're at today, you could take that pen that you've been holding in your hand and you can do an act. It's not a big act, but I'm going to ask that you get up from your seat in a moment and you just lay that pen here up on the stage. In fact, this won't even be a stage. It'll be an altar. Without saying a word, that's like you saying, God, I'm going to let you start writing. I'm going to let you rename me because I'm Jacob. And trust me, I know this because I'm Jacob. I've spent a lot of my life stepping on others to get ahead. I don't work in the business world, but like your world, I do live in a world where competitive nature and carnivorous creatures survive and move forward. And I get we live in an aggressive world because we live in a fallen world. We live in a world where we're surrounded by a multitude of people that think this is all there is, so this is all they're going to live for. And so we feel like we get nervous and we lack courage. But one of the most beautiful things in being courageous is having the courage to stand up in a room with other people who are like-minded and laying something down and making a motion, having an Ebenezer moment. You know what Ebenezer means? Ebenezer is an old biblical term that says, I'm going to build a monument so I can remember that God and I did this. I do this all the time. Whenever I travel around to different places, I'll be on a walk or I'll be on a run. Sometimes it'll be at a muster. I've done rucksack marches, man, in DMV. The DMZ. And man, I picked up rocks from Korea. I've been in Afghanistan and picked up a rock. Been in West Africa, Rwanda, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, been Togo, Benin, Ghana, last year Syria, Jordan, Israel, UAE. But whenever the Lord really speaks, I'll take a rock. Because when He speaks, I often forget. I go back home, and after I've seen the Lord move in a magnificent way, just like some of y'all did when you went to Uganda. God moved, but then you come back home and you get mad because there's a long line in the coffee shop and you got to wait to pay $6 to get coffee with whipped cream on top. And you forget about all that. And if you're like that, I'm with you. So I get these rocks because sometimes I'll hold that rock and I'll remember, no, the Lord is God. Holiness is His name. And He spoke to me on that day. And I'm not forgotten. I'm reminding myself today. So in a moment, we're going to have an Ebenezer moment where you're going to be able to say, okay, God, whether it's, God, I give you my life, or God, I've given you my life, but I've really been struggling with this decision. I'm going to give you the pen. I'm going to start listening to you. I'm going to let you write because you know better. And some of y'all may just want to linger here for a moment, or you may want to go back to your seat, but I'm going to ask you to do this. Listen to Him rename you. Because He will take you, liar. He will take you, heel grabber. He will take you, con man, con woman. And He will say, I'm going to name you something. And God is a giver of life. And He will let Him speak life to you. Have the courage to let God speak life to you. Because He knows you. He has knitted you. He's the same God. When He's looking down at Jacob, He's the same God that saw Jacob when he was in his mother's womb. Think about that, on the desert floor. Imagine yourself there with your hip dislocated. I don't care, male, female, whatever, child, adult, it doesn't matter. And you're holding on to the leg of the Almighty and the eyes that have seen you when you were in your mother's womb. The mouth that spoke light and darkness into being on day one and the hands that would someday be pierced for you, reach down and say, who are you and let me rename you? Today you respond by saying, here's the pen that I've been writing my own story to. I'm tired of being the lead character in an infomercial about me. I'm ready to be in an epic story. But it takes a courageous act. I don't know if you're up to that or not. I will tell you this. He will ask us to take the road less traveled. And to quote the poet, it will make all the difference. I'm going to ask you to bow your head and close your eyes, not because I want you to pray anything that I ask you to pray, but I want you to get alone for a moment because you'll be judged individually. And I'm going to ask the praise team to come up here. And as the praise team makes their way up here, I just want to simply ask, everyone in this room, I don't care if you're a volunteer, I don't care if you're a weekend leader, one of the ministers here, I don't care if you're a veteran Christian of 8 decades. What are you wrestling with? What are you wrestling with? God has been asking. And expecting you to hand that pen over that you've been writing your story with. And just think about it. This is why I wanted you to get alone. Your story's great that you've been writing. It's not bad. All right, it's impressive. You're a loving people. This is a great church. If I lived here, this would be my church. But I believe God wants to do something specifically with you individually. And for the person that's sitting there thinking, I'm talking about the person in front of him or behind him or to the left or the right, I'm talking to you. He is not finished with you. You're not done unless you're dead, all right? He is wanting to write something in you. But you have got to have the courage to step forward and let him take control. Now, in a moment, I'm just asking you to do something simple, because it's not for me, it's not for Pastor Joe. This is for you to have a moment where you go, I remember when I laid my pen down on that situation. And we're gonna be led in music, but it's gonna be a moment of worship, not because it's music, because music's not worship. It's the sacrificial living that is worship. And as an act of worship, you're gonna be able to come down and you're gonna be able to say, I'm worshiping you, God, by giving you control of this situation. For some of y'all, it's gonna be a small sector of your life, but maybe there's somebody in here that has never totally given their entire life, and they said, God, I'm just gonna give you all my life. When I prayed to receive Christ for the first time and I was in college, my prayer was simply, God, I've messed up my life. I don't know how much more I have left, but what I have, I will give to you. Maybe you need help kind of processing this out. Grab one of our ministers. If you're a student here, grab one of the people that was one of your leadership team. There is plenty of prayer people in the back, in the front, that would love to walk with you through this. But let's truly make this an act of worship by not just singing songs, but doing something that takes a sacrifice. Would you stand with me even right now? And as you stand with me, God, this is your time. And we are listening. We are waiting. But God, I am so sorry that I myself have been playing games with little things in my life. I've given you my life, but there are things in my lifestyle that I've yet to fully give. And in this one particular situation, I'm no longer going to worry about it. I'm no longer going to fret about it. I don't care if it means something with my family, with my friends, with my finances. Lord, I give you this situation, and I'm going to ask you to start writing it because you know better. I submit to you.